The reason I'm going to be talking to you about school and work in Africa is because you're looking at jobs and things, so I thought, what can I do that might be a little bit interesting and different? And I think it's quite nice for you to kind of have some sense as to how it is for boys and girls your age in other parts of the world. Now, you may at your school do stuff about Africa. Does anybody here actually do any stuff about Africa at their school? Yep, good, there's one person there. What country have you looked at, do you know? Ah, yes, to sat on the P2P thing. Yeah. Yeah. Which country have you been, know about?
Well, I only done ancient civilizations, so the only country I've done is ancient Egypt, with the Old Kingdom, the Middle Kingdom, and the New Kingdom.
Okay, great. Now, it's very good to realize that Egypt is part of Africa. Absolutely. Okay, so the country I'm going to be talking about, which I have most experience of, is Tanzania. I have been to South Africa a couple of times. I've been to Egypt very briefly, and I've been to Ethiopia a few times. I'm going to be talking about Ethiopia tomorrow night to the adults. But Tanzania is that country there. Now, am I standing in your way? Can you see all right? So there's Africa. See, there's South Africa you were talking about. So you can see it's a long way up, halfway up. This is called East Africa, to where Tanzania is. There, and Egypt is right up there. See, so it's sort of halfway down Africa. So it's a long old, to fly from the United Kingdom from there to there is a good 8-10 hour flight. So it's a long way. And it's an interesting country. There's a kind of bigger map of it. I'll stand back here so you can see. The capital is called Dar es Salaam. And there's an island called Zanzibar here, which was very famous because it was a place where slaves were kept. So at one time, and you may have learned something about this because American history is tied up with this, a lot of Africans were brought out, were captured in the 17th century, were just captured and taken in chains right the way across to the coast to Dar es Salaam, and then shipped across, or to Bagamoyo, then shipped across to Zanzibar, where they were held in the most awful conditions, which you can still see today, before they were sold, and then they were shipped in ships. And those who survived all of that would get to the what we now know as the Caribbean islands, to perhaps places like Guyana in South America, and to America, to what's now the United States of America, where they were used to work in the sugar plantations. And they had a very, very tough time, did those slaves, and it wasn't until really the 19th century that slavery was lifted and abolished. So that's Tanzania. You can see it's a very big country. Right at the top here is a place called the Serengeti National Park, where you can go today and you can see lions and leopards and other big game, elephants wandering around. There's a mountain here called Kilimanjaro. Has anybody heard of Mount Kilimanjaro? Well done, yeah. So that's the highest mountain in Africa. It's over 20,000 feet. And it's snow-capped all the year round. Although, sadly, because of global warming, gradually the snow and ice on the top has been reducing, and it's thought that in 20 years' time there may not be any snow on it at all. So it's quite an impressive mountain. It's just inside Tanzania. Anyway, so there you are. That's a little bit of geography for you. I know not everybody's interested in geography. Now, there is, mind the way, there is, perhaps if I go over here, it's better. Is it going to mess up your... Okay. There is Mount Kilimanjaro, and you can see the snow and ice on the top, and you imagine that's a pretty impressive thing. When that mountain was first sighted by Europeans who went to Africa, then they were pretty astonished to think that right in the heat of Africa that there was a mountain that had snow on the top. And it's often you can be there and not see it at all because it's swathed in cloud. I've flown past it many times, and usually the pilot tries to give you a good shot if he can, but that was a nice view that came up just when I happened to be where I happened to be to take that photograph. It's a very impressive mountain. So here's some kids. What do you think they're actually... What are they putting in their mouths and chewing, do you guess? Yep. Well done. Yeah, sugar cane. Yeah, so they don't have sweets or candy, as you would call them, and that kind of stuff. Most of them are from pretty poor families. So something like that, a bit of sugar cane, they can cut in fields where it's just growing and chew it and get the sweetness out of it is what you see a lot of people doing and a lot of children as well. You can see they're all kind of quite happy to be there. Now, here's some children going to school. So we're going to think about school, first of all. And what do you notice about them going to school? What's different from the way you go to school? Yeah?
They walk.
Yes, they walk. Good. I take it you ride. Yep.
It's not surrounded by buildings.
Okay. So it's sort of a rural area. Yep.
Yes,
they're all wearing uniform. Do you see that? So they're all, every one of them is wearing a uniform. So although they're very poor, most of them are coming from very poor families in a rural area, they have a uniform, and most of those uniforms they're wearing will be second or third hand. So they wear them until they've grown out of them, and then they get passed down to the next children coming along. But they look after those uniforms, although you can see it's pretty sort of dusty down here and dirty. I get sort of dusty when I'm out there. Yet they do manage to keep themselves very clean indeed. They don't have kind of nice bathrooms and shower facilities, but they usually have access to water, which they probably have to fetch from a pump or from a well, and they manage to keep themselves pretty clean, which is a good thing. Now, what do you think of that for a school? It's actually a school where there's an ecclesia, a meeting that meets. That's on a Sunday, and it's the ecclesia in a place called Masoma. And so they rent a schoolroom on a Sunday in order to have their meetings. And what do you think this is on the wall outside the room? Yep.
Plant and anatomy.
Yes, it's a plant. Anything about the plant? What do you think these things are here? Why has it got some writing down here? Is it just for decoration? Yep.
It's explaining the different parts of the plant.
Well done, yes. So do you see, it's not just a decoration. It's out there and it's explaining the different parts of the plant so the children can learn something from that. And when you go inside that classroom, there are none of the sort of things we've got in here, like computers or even a whiteboard. There'd just be bare desks and very few resources at all. Now, here's some children. Now, this is not the school I've just been showing you. These actually are orphans. And they're in a little school, which, in fact, has been helped by the Christadelphians in Dar es Salaam, because there's a Christadelphian that works there. And these children have no mums and dads. Has anybody got any idea why they would not have any mums and dads alive? What might have happened? Yeah? Okay, well, hang on. Somebody else, yeah?
Maybe malaria?
Could be malaria, or?
Or some of their parents, they might not have been able to take care of them?
Not actually the case. I mean, that does sometimes happen, particularly in India. A lot of parents in India have large families, and if they can actually hand some of their children over to an orphanage, especially if it's a girl, then they do so. But that doesn't happen much in Africa. But there's another. Malaria is a good example. Is there any other particular disease which is? Yes,
AIDS.
Yes. So you've probably heard of AIDS. And that's one of the most serious diseases across Africa, along with malaria, and their parents are dead, and so there are a lot of children whose parents have died as a result of AIDS and malaria. And sadly, of course, some of them contract AIDS from their parents as well. So they have to be looked after, and they depend upon charities that set up schools like this. And although they're in very crowded conditions, yet they're still happy to be there, and the teachers try and teach them as best they possibly can and help them to get a foot in life. In some countries, we don't in Tanzania, but in Kenya, for example, across the border, we have some Christadelphian schools, which are used to help orphans, but there are so many orphans in Africa, we couldn't, you know, we just couldn't begin to provide schools for them all. Here's another primary school in a village that I regularly go to. There's a little ecclesia in this village, and when I went there this time, the teachers wanted to see me because they wanted to find a school in England that would make some kind of a link with them. And when I said to them, well, I was thinking, well, maybe they could link up by computer. So I said, do you have any computers here at all? And they said, well, we don't have electricity. So, you know, I just thought, well, they might not have computers, but they might just have one, but then it's impossible because they don't have any electricity in there. So there you are. There's another school, not the same one. You can see all the children lining up outside for, I suppose, a kind of assembly. I guess that's the head teacher, or certainly a teacher, that's giving them a sort of talk at the beginning of the day when they've just arrived at school. And again, you can see they're all in some uniform. In this case, the boys are wearing khaki trousers and the girls are wearing these sort of blue skirts. And you can see these girls here are wearing head coverings, so they'd be Muslims, because that east coast of Africa was worked by the Arabs long ago. That's why Dar es Salaam is an Arabic word. Salaam means peace in Arabic. And so you've got quite a bit of Muslim influence as well as the Christian influence, which comes from the fact that it was occupied by the Germans and then by the British up until about 50 years ago. There's two of the teachers that want to speak to me, they're in their office, and you see they don't have any computers. Everything's written up on lists and things. This chap, we have established a link with a school in England as a result of it. And here's inside the classroom, and see how the children are greeting me with a kind of salute in the morning, and they all chant, "Good morning, teacher," because they've learnt some things in English. Do you know what their main language would be? What would they speak in this part of East Africa? Yes?
Probably Arabic.
No. Good guess, though. It's called Swahili. All right? There's a language called Swahili, and Swahili is spoken in widely through Kenya, Tanzania, and Zambia, in those East African countries. It was a language, interestingly, developed by the Arabs in order to facilitate trades. So most people in this part of the world have their native language from the region where they've grown up. And then they will know Swahili, which is spoken right the way through East Africa. And then some of them will have learnt English. In fact, they all now learn English in school. And they're often very keen to sort of practice their English because they realise it helps them to plug into the rest of the world. Here's another little group. You see how they're kind of wedged into the desks in their classrooms. Now, they own those desks. They don't get provided with the desk. When they go to school, they have to pay for the desk. And, of course, in this case, there's four people sharing the desk. And so they've got a quarter share in the desk. And the desks get recycled and repaired. They go on for years and years and years. I don't actually know what they cost. Wouldn't be a lot of money. But it illustrates the fact that whereas you're used to having so much provided for you, they are not. And you can't see many books around there either. We saw some of them with exercise books. But often there are very few textbooks. So most of their learning is done by the teacher just talking to them like I'm talking to you. So imagine going in at the beginning of the day and having the teacher talking to you, teaching you English, teaching you maths, teaching you science, teaching you a bit of geography and all the other subjects. It all has to be done by the teacher just telling them and perhaps writing something up on a board or on a thing like that. There's some children running to another school I visited last year. You see, it's just first thing in the morning. They don't have a bell that's ringing. Somebody is actually banging an old kind of metal saucepan that was hanging down, and it just made a clanging noise, and that was the signal for everybody to get to school as fast as possible. And there's one of the little, probably the first class, and as it's a reasonable sort of day, they're not even in their classroom. They're sitting outside, which is rather nice, although you can see it's not very clean conditions in a way for those little children to be sitting in. And here inside a classroom, you can see again, these are slightly older children, But it's still primary school. Primary school goes up, I think, to sort of 12 or 13. So the top end would be about the age of some of you. Again, they're pretty well jammed in there. Look at them in this classroom. See, there's hardly room to move, is there? And some of them are having to sit on the floor. But whereas, I guess if you had a class like that in your school, it might be a bit of a challenge for some of the teachers to keep order. Here, there's no problem at all. Those kids come to school, they accept that the teacher is in charge, they expect to sit there and to learn because they want to learn, and they try and do their very, very best. In fact, they're desperate to learn. And if we could provide them with more books and things to help them to learn, they'd be extremely pleased. This is an interesting picture. The children are queuing up, and you see they've got bags, just plastic bags, and this one is tipping something into this bowl. What do you think that is that's being tipped in?
Rice.
Rice, well done, good shot, yeah, rice. And the reason why they're all tipping rice is because they've got exams on the next couple of days, or tests, I suppose. And because the tests last all day, whereas normally they get into school, say, by 8 o'clock in the morning, and they go home by 1 o'clock, so they may have a sort of bit of a break, but the school doesn't provide them with any food. But when they have tests, they're going to be staying at school longer to get the tests done. And so the school, they need to be fed. And so they all have to bring a measure of rice along, and that rice will then be cooked up so that when they have their break between their tests at some point, they'd all get served some rice just to keep them going. And just to the right is off the picture, the teacher was sitting with a list of names and they were all being ticked off to check they'd brought their measure of rice. There's another classroom. You see again, there's not much room, is there? In that, imagine spending even a week here at Bible school being jammed in like that. But I can guarantee that if they were at a Bible school and if I went into that room to teach them lessons each morning, they would sit there and listen, and if I asked them any questions, they'd respond like you've responded. They're very kind of bright and ready to learn whatever they possibly can. There's that little class again under the tree. And this is actually a picture of a secondary school. You can see these are older children. You can see there's more sign of exercise books around, but not too many signs of textbooks. And you can see the state of the room. So that's how it is for children in Tanzania and in many parts of Africa. The kind of school they go to is a long way away in terms of its standards, in terms of its quality from what you're used to here. And in fact, many children don't continue to secondary education because they can't afford it, particularly the girls. The parents tend to think, oh, well, if somebody's going to continue with education, it'll be the boy, because they see the boys as being able to earn and do more useful things, whereas they see the girls as being more useful in the home and around the home. So many girls drop out of school, age 12, 13, and just stay around in the village helping their mum in various domestic tasks. And there's just a nice little group of kids that came up and wanted to be photographed, as they often do, when I was actually about to be involved in a baptism. Now, so that's enough about school. We're going to think a little bit about jobs. Now, what work do you think those people do? Yep.
They're probably fish for food and salmon.
That's right. So they're fishermen, all right? See the interesting shape of the boats? It's like a sort of catamaran, and it has that, I don't quite know what you call that type of a sail, but they can go pretty fast through the water, and they go out onto the Indian Ocean. They catch fish, and then they come in to a place like this, which is a sort of landing place where fishing boats come in. They offload the fish, and very often you'll find that there's a lot of women and people all crowding around when the boat comes in, and they'll immediately sell off their catch to people. And the people that buy it will then take a bucket full of fish or a couple of buckets full of fish that they've bought, and they'll take it off to some market and sell it on trying to make a bit of money. And so the fisherman's earned some money because he's been able to sell his fish right there, and the person that buys it earns some money by taking it and then selling it on elsewhere. So it's really very similar to the way fishing would have happened in Bible times on the Sea of Galilee, where the fisherman would go out on his boat, bring the fish in, probably sold it off there and then on the shore, and then the people who bought it would take it to various markets for people to buy, including, you know, up to, for example, from Galilee. It might be taken by people on a donkey or on a horse and cart or something or other to places like Jerusalem, to other places further away where people want to be able to eat fish, but they're not anywhere near the lake. So in Bible times, it would be much more simple than in our modern sophisticated distribution systems and supermarkets and things, but very similar to how it is here in Africa. And you see the fish being sold off here? See, this man just got his fish there on the floor. People are standing around, and they'll offer him money for those fish. Here they set up little stalls, and people are sort of wandering around, and they get as, you know, they're obviously competing with each other. It's a question of somebody making an offer to them for those fish and them deciding whether they'll sell it or not sell it. So it would have been very similar to that in Bible times, although, you know, people would have been in a different sort of situation. This man said, in fact, I've forgotten the name of this fruit, I'm sorry, but again, you can see it demonstrates how a lot of people will work by getting something which they can sell from somewhere. And so if you can get out into the surrounding bush and find places where these particular fruits grow, then you can pick the fruits and you can load them up and bring them into town and sell them on to people that are just wandering around in the town. Same happens with things like coconuts, with all manner of oranges that grow wild as well as growing in cultivated areas. Now, these are some sisters, some Christadelphian sisters from our meeting in a place called Usagara, and they're busy cooking. So work, thinking of jobs and work for particularly girls in the domestic context involves a lot of food preparation and a lot of cooking. And you can see they don't have a nice work surface, or they don't have any kind of implements to use to assist them. Everything's done in a very simple way. I mean, I've often been in a place where they're going to provide lunch and the chicken is still walking around in the yard that you know is going to be served up at lunch. Suddenly you hear a tremendous sort of squawking noise and that's the end of the chicken. And one of the sisters will pluck it and prepare it, and then a few hours later it's served up for lunch. So very basic, but again, in Bible times it would have been very similar. They wouldn't have had the kind of sophisticated things that we're used to. Now, what do you think about that for health and safety? I mean, there we are. You see, what's he doing? I mean, he's sawing, but what is he sawing?
He's making boards.
Yeah. So you can see, more or less, see that's about half a tree trunk there, isn't it? So they've cut down a tree. They've got this pit that they've created. They've got this big saw with one person on one end, one on the other end, and they literally saw up the trunk of the tree. And you can see here they've produced some nice thick planks. So they'll produce whatever kinds of planks are needed and are able to be sold. And you say, I mean, I just wouldn't fancy having my toe anywhere near that thing that's ripping up and down, but that's it. There's just no sense of putting any protective clothing on. They just get on with it and do it. And I'm sure there are sometimes some awful accidents. What's growing behind here? Yep. Yeah, well done. Yes, those are banana plants. In fact, you can see the bananas hanging down in one or two places, can't you? So lots of bananas are grown. The climate's ideal for them. There's another man here. Again, his toe is even nearer the edge of that saw. And you can see he's put some kind of wedges in as he's cutting it through it. He's wedging it to sort of prise it open a little bit, so that it makes the sawing easy. And there's a man down below here somewhere as well. Now, this man, again, hasn't got too much protection on his feet, has he? What do you think he's doing? Yep.
Making joy?
No. He's making something, yep.
Carving?
Yes, it's a piece of wood he's got, and what do you think he's making out of the wood? Spoon, well done, yes, good guess. See, there's the handle, and this is going to be the like a sort of wooden spoon thing that you probably use them in shops. We do at home. We have them in England, certainly. A spoon that you might use to stir some soup or what have you. But you see, it's an interesting implement that is, again, you can see how it's been simply made with a wooden handle and then a piece of iron, I suppose, that's been forged in order to make that implement. And again, in the Bible, we read about metal instruments, and about and if you think of the Lord Jesus Christ, he grew up in a carpenter's shop, and so some of the things that would have been used in his carpenter's shop in order to shape wood and prepare wood would have been fairly simple, nothing like the sophisticated tools that we use today. So that man would just patiently work away at that till he's produced what would be really, I'm sure, quite a nice spoon. Now, we're thinking about growing food, and you can see this is a really good market, isn't it? And it's just actually by the side of a big lake. And a lot of these tomatoes are grown around the lake, and then they're brought in by boat along with the other produce. And a lot of people have a small piece of land, and they grow food for themselves on the land and try to grow enough so they've got some surplus they can take to the market and sell, and that gives them a bit of money, which then enables them to buy something that they can't make for themselves. And most people here don't have anything like a savings account or a bank account. They don't pay using a credit card or a check or anything like that. They simply earn a bit of money by some means or other, like selling something or making something, and that bit of money they've got, they promptly spend on something else they need. Some food they can't afford themselves, or some shoes, or some clothes, or whatever it is that they need. And something like a bicycle here would be something you'd have to save up a lot of money to be able to afford a bicycle. There's where those boats were coming in, and these baskets are all packed with tomatoes. And all round the lake, there are sort of fields where they grow tomatoes. And because the lake's there, it means they can easily irrigate the tomatoes. And you see people fetching water from the lake in order to pour into trenches so that the tomatoes are well watered as they're growing. You see, it's quite a crowded, busy scene. Now, what do you think that is? What's growing there? Yep.
Grapes?
No. Yep. Okay. Something that you drink a lot of in this country and in England. Hmm?
Oranges?
No, not oranges. Yeah, have a go.
Probably totally wrong with that plant.
No. Well, hops you're thinking of, yeah? No. It's coffee.
I was going to get.
Oh, you were just going to say it. There you go. Yeah, yeah, it's coffee. See, these are coffee beans growing up here. So when the coffee beans are ready, they're picked off the tree, and then they're put in a big metal drum, and underneath they'll make a fire, a wooden fire, and the metal drum is rotated and the beans are roasted in the drum, just as you might in some coffee shops. You can see coffee beans being roasted, so then it's freshly ground from that. So coffee, particularly in the Kilimanjaro area, Because it's high ground, that very high mountain, the slopes of the mountain, create ideal conditions for growing coffee. And there are many coffee plantations in that part of Africa. You can see these are all coffee plants here. And interestingly, they're growing bananas as well as having these big trees, because the coffee plants don't like to be in full sun. They like to be in a shady sort of environment, not completely shady, but so that's an ideal environment where there are other things growing which keep the sun off for some of the time, so the bananas are happy there, those other trees are happy, and the coffee plants are happy because they don't get scorched too much by the sun. Now, what can you see there? Yep. No. good guess. Yes?
Sand.
It looks like sand. It isn't.
Is that rice?
Yes, it is. Good guess. It's rice. Yeah, so rice grows on plants, a bit like wheat really, but it obviously produces a little seed, which is like a seed of wheat, except that it's rice. And then it's brought in and it's laid out in the sun on these big mats in order to dry it off. And sometimes it then goes through a mill to make various kinds of... In fact, no, they don't put rice through a mill. They put maize through a mill in order to produce maize flour. Yeah, so again, you can see how what's growing in the field gets directly into a situation where it's put into bags and sacks. People buy those bags and sacks, take them home, and process the food. So it's much more basic than you're used to going to a supermarket. Everything's already been packaged up and prepared and things done to it, and you take it out and just sling it in the oven, away you go. This involves a lot more work, but in a way it's much more natural because you're growing the food. Not much is happening to it before it's then made available for people to buy and to use and in order to feed their families. This place has got a number of baskets full of various other things. That could be rice, I'm not absolutely sure. Those could be coffee beans. And often there'll be things like spices that are being sold. And so you go along and you just buy an amount that you want to buy, and the merchant pays your money, and the merchant gives it to you, and off you go with it. Yeah. So of course that reminds us, of course, another job that people have is to be a shopkeeper, in order to be somebody who's a merchant that's buying stuff and selling stuff. Now this lady is preparing food. She's actually grinding maize. You're used to sweet corn, aren't you? That's what maize is. So the little yellow sweet corn, there was some tonight that had come no doubt out of a tin or something or other that we were eating. So that sweet corn is then put into that container and she's grinding it down to a sort of a powder, and she'll make from that a kind of porridge which is called ugali, which they put with a piece of meat. Rather like you had mashed, there was mashed potato available this evening, and they pick it up with their fingers and roll it up a little bit and then eat it. And in fact, people use their fingers much more for eating. You might think, well, how disgusting. But they're actually very meticulous about washing their hands before they eat and washing them again at the end of eating. And for many sorts of food, it's actually sometimes, for example, with fish, it's sometimes easier to pick the fish off the bone with your fingers than it is to fiddle around with knives and forks, but they just don't have knives and forks. See, this lady is preparing some bananas. The Swahili word is ndizi. Some bananas are of a certain type. We call them plantains, that are for cooking. But even the sweeter bananas that we eat can be cooked in that way, and they're actually very tasty, dipped in a little bit of salt, and there is she's cooking it and selling it off to whoever wants to buy it. Do you notice something about her posture? We wouldn't encourage anybody. We'd encourage somebody to bend their knees and to crouch down like this, but they tend to keep their legs straight and bend right over. I couldn't even bend over that much, I'm sure. But they get very flexible, and they often are working at floor level, because everything's operating at floor level. They don't have work surfaces that you're used to. And so the women are used to spending a lot of time bending down, preparing food like that. But they've got strong backs, because there's other things they do that make their backs strong. What might you think an African lady might do that gives her a strong back? Yes? 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 Yes, carrying stuff on their heads. What else might they carry on their heads that's heavy?
Water.
Water, yes. So you sometimes see a lady with a big container of water, and it's almost to the top. You can see it stopping around, and they're walking along, and they have probably a little pad made out of a bit of cloth on their head, just to make a cushion, as it were, between the big plastic container and their head. But they have wonderful posture, and they just walk along, and they'll turn round and look, and they'll go. And the ground is not nice, level ground. It's often very uneven, and there are rough places. They have to watch where they're walking. And they're just walking along, balancing this great thing on their head, and it's not spilling over at all. It's remarkable. So that helps to give them strong backs, and they carry a lot of things on their heads. And actually, from a posture point of view, it's better, although we don't do it, like it's better to carry a suitcase on your head than it is to carry it at your side, where you're being pulled over and it isn't actually doing your body very much good. So to have the weight evenly coming down from the top is good, and particularly as from the time they're little children, they're used to carrying things on their head. You know, they have these strong backs. There's something else they put on their backs, the women in particular. Yes? Yes, so often they've got a baby. And they have big squares of cotton cloth. They call it a kanga, which may form a skirt for them. See, that's a kanga there, and she's got a kanga on there, and another one there. And they're just big squares of cloth, which can be made into a. You just wrap it round as a skirt, or you might wrap it across to protect your blouse from getting splashed or something. You may make a head covering out of it. I'm not sure that one particular one is, but sometimes you do. And you may use it to put your baby in the kind of shawl thing and sling it on your back. And so you'll see women going along, even with a big load on their head and the baby slung on their back. So they have very strong backs because of that sort of physical labour. And just incidentally, this lady is preparing oranges, so cutting up the oranges, just selling them to people on the roadside. And here again you can see some grapes, that's some sweet corn being sold off there, and again another big pile of oranges. So although you have sort of normal kind of looking shops, not normal like youth are used to, but you know, near enough, you also have an awful lot of street vendors, people who are not wealthy enough to own a shop, but they will get something from somewhere and bring it along and on the side of the road try to sell it. And they may sit there all day and make just a few shillings that will help to pay for something or other. Of course, this is a meat market, and the meat's been brought in and strung up, and people are wandering around in order to buy meat to sell off. Now, what do you think this guy's doing? Somebody who hasn't had a go? Okay, you guess. Making coconut?
No, picking coconuts.
Picking coconuts. Well, he could be, yes. He's certainly on a coconut palm. Yes, he's getting the sap. So he climbs up the coconut. In fact, they often make little steps in the side of the trunk. You can't sort of see from there. You see he's got bare feet. So he go right up in there. They're really high. And they'll go right up to the top and then straddle these branches. And he's got a little knife in his little tin. And he makes an incision in the branch of the tree and the sap comes out. And that sap is used, regrettably, to make a type of drink which is quite potent. But you know, these guys can make it. They know that people will buy it, and so for them, it's another way in which they can earn some money in order to keep themselves. So you see, people have to kind of use a lot of resources, have to find some way in which they can not only feed themselves from what they can grow, but actually get a little bit of money to buy other things. Look at all these sandals that are on sale. So they're obviously a job lot that's been bought from somebody, perhaps dumped from China or somewhere. And they'd be very, very cheap, but they're actually quite comfortable, and you see a lot of those now in Tanzania. And you can see, this is another market. See all these people, they've just brought in a few, that looks like peppers to me, and there's some cabbages and some tomatoes there. So each person has just brought in a few things that are from where they live, that they've managed to grow, in order to sell them to get a little bit of money. There's some ladies carrying their water pots, do you see? This one's got a two-story effort. And they're walking along, balancing it quite successfully. You can see quite a few bicycles there. And you can see these big baskets that carry various other things. Now, there's another interesting job there. Somebody who's set up a beauty salon. And I don't know, goodness knows what, it's probably a hairdo. And a lot of African ladies spend hours fiddling with their hair because, of course, for a lot of Africans, naturally their hair is very tight and, I suppose we'd say, frizzy. So they put hair extensions on. Some even wear wigs. I mean, that looks like a wig. And so you'll sometimes see people and you think, goodness, and realise they're actually wearing a wig, if they can afford it. So although, again, it's difficult and they don't have much money, you still get people who will set up a little salon like that. And incidentally, what do you notice about the spelling of beauty? Yeah? What's wrong with it? Yeah? That's right, yes. It should only have one T in it. So I'm afraid spelling is not always of the best. This lady is actually preparing rice. The rice has been removed from the plant, and she'll be shaking it like that to get out any impurities that she possibly can. This lady is in an earlier stage. Similarly, I'm not sure if it's rice or maize that she's. We call it winnowing in the Bible, that kind of thing, where they throw it up, and the chaff drops to one side, and the grains are then fall down ready to be used. There's another lady who's preparing some food. Again, she managed to sit down, although she's still working at floor level. Here's a little cafeteria. So that's the waitress. You can see the tables. These are actually members of an ecclesia that I was visiting, and we went and had something to eat after the Sunday meeting. And there's the kind of lunch being served, and you can see it's a pretty basic kind of surrounding. Now, what do you think these guys are doing? Yep. It could be. Yes?
Community service.
Yeah, so why are they doing community service? Yes?
Prisoners.
Yeah, they're prisoners. Yeah, that's why this man is standing here with a gun. So actually behind here is a big prison. We have people within prison who do correspondence courses, and in some cases we have people who've been baptized who've been in prison, and then they've got time on their hands, and often the prison authorities are very happy if we provide correspondence courses and tutors, because it gives them something to do and occupies them, and so they'll learn about the Bible and have a little Bible class even inside the prison, and then when they get let out of prison, some of them are keen to continue and can be baptized. So just as here you would have various forms of dealing with people who've committed crimes, so similarly there they have the same thing. And this prison had very, back behind that hedge, there's massive grounds, all of which were very nicely cultivated to grow food and stuff for the prisoners. So probably they ate what they grew within the prison. Yeah, so it's just a reminder to us, really. Interesting, in the Bible, you don't get prisoners in that sense. You get prisoners of war, but under the law of Moses, people all did sort of community service. If you couldn't afford to pay, or you'd robbed somebody or stolen something and you couldn't make reparation, then you served the person. You became a servant and you did something to put the situation right. So it avoided having prisons which are difficult to run and expensive. These ladies are doing the weekly washing. No washing machines here, all done by hand, and all will involve them bending over, like in that other picture, rather than crouching down. But they do a good job. When I'm there, because it's hot and also I travel as lightly as I can, I perhaps have a couple of pair of trousers like the ones I'm wearing here, three or four shirts. And as I travel around, I'll stay in a cheap little guest house. It's very easy to ask one of the ladies in the guest house if they can wash your clothes for you. And they'll come back the next, if you give them one evening, you go out the next day to see the ecclesia, see the brethren and sisters, come back in the evening, there will be your shirt and your trousers, nice, beautifully washed, nicely pressed, and it'll cost you, just a dollar or something, if that, for that service. So they're very nice women, but they're very used to working hard in fairly what to us would be primitive ways. Now, these people, you can see what they're doing because they're actually operating sewing machines. You remember we said how those school uniforms get handed down. And so a lot of clothes are second-hand in the first place, because actually a lot of clothes, you may have clothing recycling facilities, do you? Yeah, we do in England. So people, with clothes they no longer want, they put them in a recycling thing, and very often they end up here in Africa. And then they're sold in market areas, people come out, and then people get the clothes and they find they don't quite fit properly. So there are lots of people who are tailors who will fix things up for you and keep those clothes going for a much longer time. We probably, would... If our clothing got too old and torn, we'd chuck it away. But there, they'll repair it and just keep it going as long as they possibly can. And you'll see how, just as traditionally, men have been tailors in Europe as well. So you get men who operate sewing machines just as much as you get women operating sewing machines. But again, you can see there's no electricity. It's not an electrically driven sewing machine. It depends on somebody being able to pedal in order to make the thing go round and to work it. Now, what have we got here? Yep. Bricks, yes, they're bricks. So they're bricks made out of mud. So, again, you think of all the bricks on the buildings in this campus. You don't even think where they're made, do you, or how they're fired. But here, you can see the bricks on that building there. They've all been made in this way. So they'll dig into a sort of muddy area, make it all wet, and then they'll have, say, a wooden container, put the muddy stuff in until it's dried enough to then be stood out in the sun like that. And then when it's dried sufficiently, they'll put it into this. What is this? A kiln, yes, that's good. Well done, a kiln. In fact, when you remember Daniel... Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego were thrown into the fiery furnace. The fiery furnace probably was a brick kiln that was used by Nebuchadnezzar to make bricks for the great building works of Babylon. And so this is just a very simple, small kiln where the bricks that have dried sufficiently are then put in and fired up and they come out really quite solid bricks ready to be sold and used in buildings like the ones along the top there. And here's a nice little girl. I know this girl actually. She's called Buyegi. And she's, well, we had some spinach a bit like that this evening in the dining room. So she's just preparing it. So small children will soon get involved in domestic duties, helping their mum, helping to prepare food. The boys will be helping their father in all kinds of ways. Often you see them looking after a cow somewhere from an early age, very busy about various kinds of activities. But of course, all this, for us, the most important thing that we go to Africa for the Christadelphian Bible Mission, is to try to teach them about the Bible. And here's a couple of lads who are reading from a Swahili Bible. So we often try to provide the money so that they've got a Bible. It's not easy for them to read. They learn reading at school, but you can see from the conditions, they're not used to having books. So we have to give them a lot of encouragement. And they learn a lot of what we believe from listening to what they're told, rather than being as familiar with the Bible as we'd like them to be. But we do our very best to get them familiar with the Bible, and they're always very keen to read it. And that Word of God, which was written so long ago, gives them a set of values to help them to be honest the way they live their lives, to be kind to people, to help one another, and to learn about the hope of the coming again of the Lord Jesus Christ, of the kingdom of God, where people will, the Bible tells us, live in houses and grow crops and feed their families in a situation where the earth brings forth abundantly and where they can be secure from marauding armies or from other catastrophes and disasters that might affect their crops. And so life in the kingdom has got some, for the mortal population, some similarities, I think, with life in Africa. And for these boys learning about the kingdom of God, learning about the gospel, it provides an added motivation, an added set of directions for their lives, which can help them to cope with the circumstances in which they live. So, thank you very much indeed for listening. I hope that was interesting. And if you've got any questions, feel free to ask them. Yep.